Hello again, this is Dave Banner, returning for another edition of the podcast. This particular chapter is called The Awakened Heart. And I've been talking about this for a while now, but I want to really home in on what is an awakened heart and how do you get there. Okay, another quote by our friend Marianne Williamson. We love purely when we release other people to be who they are. The ego seeks intimacy through control and guilt. The Holy Spirit seeks intimacy through acceptance and release. What is an awakened heart? It's a heart filled with unconditional love for all of life. It accepts everything as it is with no resistance or judgment of anything or anyone, including oneself. It is basically letting go to the pulsations of life that are moving the cosmos, and they're moving you too. With the egoic mind in charge, we tend to ignore the cosmos in favor of our own personal designs, beliefs, attitudes, and compulsions. We operate as though we were God or Source. Here's the paradox. We actually are Source in human form. Remember, the Bible said we're made in the image and likeness of God, but we can't know this fact when we are in the illusory egoic identity. So when I say operate as though we were God, I mean the egoic identity, all puffed up with self-important, tries to dictate the terms of life experience. It does this primarily by resisting what is, in favor of its conception of what should be, according to its opinions, beliefs, attitudes, and values. The ego tries to substitute these thought forms for the direct experience of the inner urge of spirit, which is called the still small voice in the Bible. The ego's voice is very loud and insistent. It drowns out the still small voice of spirit. But this voice does not go away. God, you might say, has infinite patience with us mortals, knowing that when we finally decide that the ego's guidance is very poor, we will surrender to divine guidance. All the great spiritual teachings over the millennia have directed us to look within and know thyself. Until we know ourselves, we cannot transcend suffering in human form. In fact, it's because we don't know ourselves that we're so prone to suffering. We're also prone to misunderstanding the nature of who we are and the reality of ourselves. If you ask somebody, who are you, they'll say, well, I'm a father, I'm a doctor, I'm a scientist, I'm a teacher, I'm married, blah, blah, blah. These are all just roles that you play. That's not who you are. Who you actually are is a spiritual being housed in a human body. That's who you really are. But most people don't know that. They think that what they are is their outer form, their body and their mind and their emotional states. This is not who you are. This is the basis of what I call egoic consciousness. We've spoken about this before. A state of consciousness, a way of packaging the world conceptually, is what the mind does. When our mind starts to imagine we are something separate and different from the world around us, it changes the way we perceive, which means it changes our state of consciousness. The thoughts we believe alter our state of consciousness. What is a belief? A belief is a crystallized thought form, one that we have reinforced over time as our truth. We no longer challenge its veracity. We just assume it's true. Same is true of attitudes and values, which are based on beliefs. And all of these thought forms are contained in stories about who we are, about what the world is about, whether the world is dangerous or benign, and so forth. This forms what psychologists call a self-image. There are good self-concepts and bad self-concepts, but they all share a common denominator, an assumption that we are separate and different from the world around us. Everybody has that. So if you observe this shift in consciousness by doing a little experiment, imagine a little sunny day on the beach. You're living there in complete relaxation, waves lapping at the shore. You can feel the warm sand supporting you from underneath. You can feel the rays of the sun warming your face. You can hear seagulls calling in the background. If you just think those thoughts and allow yourself to really feel them, this will start to change your consciousness. You will literally start feeling differently about the present moment, even though nothing has changed, even though you're not at the beach. All of this is created in your mind through what we call imagination. Yet it can change the way you feel, and how you feel affects how you perceive yourself, others, and the world around you. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. There's a great story of this man from a foreign country who was a runner. And he entered in this 10K race. And he's running and running and running. And he's just getting up to the finish line. And he trips and falls and trips the person that's right in front of him. So he loses the race to this person. So what happened? Well, he turns out he was trapped by a dictator in his home country and told to come and win this race and win some money for his family. And if he lost the race, his family was going to be killed. Oh my God. Well, as soon as the person that got tripped heard about this, he suddenly had some compassion for this poor guy, started to feel really bad for him. Then they found out this guy was taking performance-enhancing drugs. So what happens to the guy who got tripped? He starts blaming this guy. Oh my God, you shouldn't have been doing that. I guess they're going to kill your family. I feel bad for you, but you brought it on yourself. And then the story develops even further, and it turns out that the dictator back home decides to free his family anyway. So you get the idea. Reality changes based on your experience of the circumstances that you understand. So you can say that's a good reality, that's a bad reality. The other story that you often hear is the guy whose son was aged to be drafted, and the people came through town to draft young people. And the day before they got there, he was riding his horse, fell off and broke his leg. So he couldn't be drafted. Well, everybody said, that's really lucky. Boy, are you ever lucky. You didn't have to go off to war. That's terrific. And so the young man who has this broken leg finally heals. And a series of events happened. You've probably heard this story. But the point is, depending upon how you interpret the experience depends upon your reaction to it and your judgment about it. Okay, so when your mind interprets a sense of self to mean there actually is a separate self, our consciousness changes. Everywhere it looks, it sees separation. Of course, it doesn't tell you this. Most humans don't walk around saying to themselves, I feel separate from everything around me. I feel distinct and different. This is because the egoic consciousness has become so integrated in the world you see and experience you have that you don't have to remind yourself of it. You don't have to consciously think about it because it's so deeply woven into the fabric of our consciousness. The ego is nothing more than the state of consciousness. I want to emphasize that. It's just a mental state that includes all the beliefs and attitudes and values that you've collected since birth that define who you are and define everything as being separate from you. That's what the is, if you understood this at the deepest level, you wouldn't be chained to the ego. You wouldn't be weighed down by it. You wouldn't feel isolated and alone in a hostile universe. See, that's what happens. If we see ourselves as separate, our job as a human is to duck and dive and do everything we can to survive in a very hostile universe. And it looks like it's hostile out there, you know, with drug wars and gangs and you name it, nightly news. It looks like a pretty bad world out there. But that's just an illusion formed by the survival-oriented and fearful ego. That's all it is. I'm not saying it doesn't happen to people. It does. But the conclusions you reach based on these experiences is what locks you into the separated state. If you want liberation, you must wake up from the dream our mind creates and that we are somehow separate from everything else. So how do we do that? Okay, what I talk about in this chapter is letting love rule. We have to decide to let love rule. It is said that the cosmos is made up by the energy of love. I talked about this in the very first chapter. What is love? Love is the magnetic energy that holds together the entire cosmos. It's not a very romantic way to talk about love, but that's the fact of the matter. Love is just a vibration that rules the cosmos. Love and fear are two energies, the main two energies. Love is expansive and creative. Fear is contractive and minimizing. That's just the nature of it. If we let love rule, we align ourselves with the energy that's operating the whole cosmos. And that's what we want to do. Then we don't need to be preoccupied with planning our lives. Planning is a substitute for knowing what to do next. If you align yourself with the divine design for your life, you will know what to do in every moment. If you stay in the present moment, you will find out what's the next thing to do. You don't have to make elaborate plans for the future. Now, I'm not saying planning is bad. I'm not saying that. You can plan as long as they're flexible. But if you need to change a plan because of what life presents for you, then do it. But you need to know that life knows what it's doing. You can be sure of an accurate guidance system when you listen to your heart. Don't listen to your mind. Your mind has no idea what you should be doing. It's lost in this dream of separation. It's lost in this resistance to what is. It's lost in trying to duck and dive and survive in a hostile world. That's just the nature of the ego. It's not bad, but that's just what the ego does. If you align yourself with the heart's wisdom, and you can do this using heart math and some of these other tools I've talked about, then you know what to do in the next moment. You end up, if you're ego-directed, you end up with trouble, problems, disasters, etc. The mind does not know what to do. It has a very limited perception. The heart connects you with all of life. So, listen to your heart, and you will know exactly what to do. You can listen to the heart in your outer world and your inner world, so they're both the same in reality. If you see a situation where you do not know what to do, go and quiet inside and ask, what would be the best thing for me to do right now for the good of the whole? The answer will come. Okay, so let's get an Enneagram perspective on the awakened heart. I'm choosing a type that has the most difficulty having an open heart, type 5, the observer. Fives are mental types that find it very challenging to deal with feelings. If things get too emotionally intense, fives tend to withdraw. They report feeling that the outer world seems to intrude on them and their space. They value their solitude. They're a fear type driven by an inner sense of scarcity and emptiness. They're afraid that the little they have will be taken from them by the world. The way they cope with perceived danger is to pull back. This is why a five falling in love is taking a big risk. Their defenses are not effective when they're in love. Afraid that nothing will be forthcoming from the outside, they act as though they don't want anything and are completely independent. So, for a five to have an awakened heart, they must move into their heart and allow themselves to be vulnerable. I know a formerly aloof type 5 who has converted to Sufism, which is the mystical branch of Islam. This sect provides a heart-opening meditation on a daily basis. I have known this type 5 all his life, and I can say without fear of contradiction that his heart is opened enormously, and he expresses love to all the folks he meets. What a transformation. Okay, forgiveness is natural by the awakening heart. What I mean by that is you forgive something, someone, for what they allegedly did to you. Since everybody out there is part of you, nobody really did anything to you. Forgiveness is simply relinquishing your judgments of another person and saying to them, I release you of all judgment and bless you on your journey. The spiritual thought system called A Course in Miracles promotes forgiveness as its primary orientation. This is a powerful mantra to followers recite to themselves. You are pure and innocent. All is forgiven and released. Forgiveness frees you from the negative energy of judgment and frees the other person from your condemnation, which is also a negative thought form. To forgive is good for everyone. Radical acceptance as per forgiveness is the way to go. Compassion and empathy are also natural for the awakened heart. Compassion is saying to another person, I've had difficulties in my life, so I know how you must feel. Again, this is not to be confused with enabling, which sees the other person as a victim, as you as the rescuer. No, I'm not talking about that. This helps no one. Empathy is similar to compassion. Here you're trying to fit in the other person's shoes and walking in them. This is a way for you to experience what it must be like to be that person. Both empathy and compassion acknowledge in a very specific way the oneness of all life. If you can really understand what the other person must be thinking, feeling, and experiencing, then you can be them, at least for a moment. When I was doing my Enneagram training, we did what are called panels. These are very interesting. And what this means is you get four or five people of the same type, let's say a type 7 like me, up in front of a group. And the facilitator says, okay, what's it like to experience the world as a 7? So all the 7s in the group start talking about what they see in their reality. Well, the people in the audience are flooded with empathy and compassion because they begin to see that their friends who are 7s are not wrong. They're not doing anything wrong. They're just operating from the filter of their particular type. This builds compassion and empathy. It's a really good way to go. Loving kindness is also part of the awakened heart. Realizing that you're part of a unified whole, we can extend love to parts of ourselves that appear to be out there. This is great. When asked what his religion was, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, my religion is kindness. Loving kindness is a natural attitude when you experience yourself as part of the whole. In the separated egoic state, loving kindness is a rare occurrence. And this is where a self-created suffering comes from. It comes from allowing the ego and its dualistic perception to rule us. We automatically create our own suffering this way. When we let go to the innate wisdom of the heart, our inner guide will know what to do in every moment. And when we trust this guidance, there's no need for us to categorize anything at all. You've heard the expression, let go and let God. Well, that happens to be good advice. Another way of looking at reality is through the lens of the ego. It's like watching a movie. The projector of your mind is creating a movie out there, and you allow your emotions to tell you if something is good or bad. This is great. My wife and I had a graphic experience of this recently. We've been watching the PBS masterpiece classic, Downton Abbey. It's basically a nighttime soap opera, and it's well acted and scripted. Watching this, we saw how easy it was to identify with the characters' plights and get emotionally involved. This is basically the same thing as watching one's own egoic reality and emotionally reacting to that movie. Think about it. If you live in love, the egoic projections diminish or stop. Emotional reactions lessen or cease. You have the assurance of the present moment. Living in love means serving the whole. Living in love means doing what benefits the larger whole, not just oneself. I had a strong experience of this after I wrote my book, Frame Shifting, A Path to Wholeness. As I was preparing to go on a book tour to promote the book, I was called to attend a county board meeting where they were debating on whether to allow a 3,500-head pig farm in our area. As a CAFO, a factory farm, it stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation. A number of experts, from veterinarians to doctors to epidemiologists and others, came to testify how bad it would be from a health standpoint. On the other side, a few farmers got up and said, "You can't tell me what to do with my land." But the testimony was overwhelmingly anti-CAFO. At the end of the testimony, the 29 supervisors took a vote, and to my shock, the vote was 26-3 in favor of allowing the CAFO to be built. Hadn't they heard the testimony? I had heard later that representatives of the large agribusiness interests had called each representative and told them if they blocked the CAFO, they would be sued by these companies and it could bankrupt the county in legal fees. So the board was intimidated. So once this happened, I felt called by the inner voice to run for the county board seat. I won and became the representative for my district. They tried to put in another hog farm up in Westby, about 7 miles north of here. So once again, I requested that the DNR, Department of Natural Resources, conduct a audit to make sure that what they were planning was not going to pollute our groundwater. We have what's called karst geology here, and it's very prone to having toxic elements dumped into it, ruin. This has happened in Iowa and a lot of other states. Well, oh my goodness. I got defeated on that. And this is the interesting thing that happened at the end. They were having a discussion over the final vote, which was 26-3 against me. And this one guy said into the microphone, "You know, I don't worry about too much about pollution. We already have too much pollution with nitrate in our wells. What's a little more pollution going to do?" I looked around the room and I saw all these old white guys going, nodding their heads, yes. And I knew to myself the value difference was so intense, I had to get out of there. Okay, there's an Enneagram perspective on living in love. And the awakened heart. And this Enneagram perspective is... Well, I think that's a good place to stop. Let's stop right there and...